Welcome to the Jay Willis Show on Locker Room Access. On your way to playing golf. How'd that go?
I'm getting better. Let's just say I'm getting better, Mark. In fact, I played yesterday as well. I'm taking advantage of, we're still in preseason. So we're going Monday, Wednesday, Friday. And we give the guys Tuesday, Thursday, where they're just doing conditioning. And they do that in the morning. So I'm taking full advantage of those afternoons where I can get out on Tuesdays and Thursdays. My iron game is much better. I'm just spraying the thing all over the place off the tee box. If I could ever get off the tee box, I'll be really good. I shouldn't say really good, but I'll be able to play with Tony and Coach Soderberg because those dudes are good.
How far can you hit?
When I make good contact and it goes straight, I probably get it about 280.
That sounds impressive. I don't know much about golf, but that sounds like it's a pretty far shot.
No, it's when I don't try to muscle the thing and overhit is when I hit my best shot. Now I've been putting extremely well. My around the green, my chipping and putting has been a lot better. So, look, it's like anything. The more you play, the better you get.
I was just going to ask you, how do you improve your golf game?
I would have to get a lot of hall passes from my wife in order to do that. If she lets me out of the house to play, I can get better. But once the season – listen, before COVID – I probably didn't play, I played twice in the last 4 years. And because of COVID, I've been able to get out and play a little more. It's one of the few things you can socially distance. And every time I play, each guy's got his own cart. And so it's a nice way to be competitive. I can't hoop anymore. You know, softball is one outlet, and now golf, it seems to be the other outlet.
Are you watching golf these days?
Ironically, yes. In fact, I'm so into it now. We got a staff thing where we text every night and kind of update each other on what's happening recruiting-wise and all of that. And I actually text the guys after that BMW where Rahm and Johnson hit those crazy putts. Johnson hit a putt to send it into a playoff, and then John Rahm won the BMW, I want to say 2 weeks ago. So, yes, I am watching golf. That putting was ridiculous. In fact, I hit a pretty nice putt yesterday. Coach Van Joss was with me. It broke a little bit. It was a left to righter and probably about 25 feet. And I slammed that thing right in the hole.
Who is the best golfer besides, is it Tony or is it Coach Sody on the staff?
On the staff is Tony. Brad is really good. Coach Getter's good. Owen and I suck. Johnny sucks. Ronnie sucks.
Would Ronnie say he sucks? Because he's so competitive.
No, he has no patience. He has no patience. And then
only in life he has patience.
Say again.
Only in life he has patience.
Correct. Yeah. But you know who's really good? The two guys on our team that are better than Tony are Sam and Carson McCorkle. Carson McCorkle's a scratch golfer. That dude's really good. Mm.
So getting to b-ball now, I read this morning a tweet, I think it was from Rothstein, that the ACC voted to have all the teams and all the members make the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, yeah.
Can you explain that? Because I have some questions about that.
Yeah, I think they were thinking, one, we can't afford to not have a tournament back-to-back years. And two, I think, and I wasn't privy to this meeting, obviously, this was, you know, athletic directors and head coaches and presidents. But I think the thought process is if there's a unbalanced schedule amongst all the conferences and teams, if, for example, a team has to forfeit games because of positive tests and they've got a good record, but they didn't play the same as some others. If you disqualify certain teams, because like what are the metrics for getting into a tournament that may not be 68 teams this year? And why would that be fair based on what we potentially are going to have to go through? Why not just make it open to everybody? And you know, I don't know if that's a bad idea. I can wrap my brain around that, like give everybody a chance to make it. And this year in particular, because there's so many uncertainties, you know, ACC may play 20 games, Big Ten may play, they may only get through 15. You know, you just don't know. Right. Because of what we're in.
The problem, one of the issues I see with that is if the ACC votes for every member to make it, the Big Ten votes for every member to make it, the Big East votes for every member to make it, how many in the Power Five conference votes for every team to make it, how many teams are left? How many spaces are left for the additional teams to make it?
No, it'd be everybody. It'd be a tournament of every, and listen, the cream will probably rise to the top, but they're trying to salvage what they can of the season and the game and make the best out of a bad, what potentially, we don't know, what potentially could be a bad situation. Look, our kids want to play. We want to play. I know the fan bases want to see basketball. And, you know, I guess we're trying to make it fair for everybody. Like we're trying to make it fair across the board. And I've heard the counter arguments, well, then why play a regular season? The regular season doesn't count. Just get ready for the tournament. Well, you know, if you can play conference games and get as many of those in as you can, do that. I mean, there's got to be some preparation to get ready for the tournament. You can't just not play all year and then expect to play come tournament time. I thought it made some sense. So we'll see what happens. This by no means is this what we're gonna do, but I can see both. I see both sides of it, but I kind of like it. It's different, it's unique, and it's probably the only time that we'll ever be in this situation where you could do something like pull off something like this.
Right. All right, before we get to Jay Willie's bubble solution, which will be in between, I'm going to try to hold that off in between Joe Harris and Justin McCoy, and we're waiting for Joe Harris to come on. What kind of player was Joe at UVA? And how did you see his development?
Tough as nails, a guy that worked, could do everything, could shoot it, could post up, could rebound. Had to work at it defensively, but he was never going to back down from a challenge or from anything. And really had a desire to be the best he could be and wanted to be a pro from the time he stepped foot on campus. I mean, that was his.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting you bring that up, and I'll actually hold this point off till when Joe comes on, but I have a conversation to repeat that I had with Richie McKay when we walked into Tony Bennett's office with Richie McKay with Ty as a recruit.
Yeah.
He was on an unofficial visit. He's going to be joining in 1 second.
It's not like Joe to be late. He's normally.
No. He's not late. He's not late at all. Before he committed or before he got to Grounds, I got it right this time, Grounds.
Yeah.
What kind of player did you think he was going to be? Did you think he was going to be that kind?
Well, see, I wasn't as privy to Joe's game as Tony and Ron because they had come from obviously Washington. There he is.
Jay Willie. Mark, what's going
Buckets.
On?
So, just Jay Willie's just talking about you prior to you coming to Grounds.
Prior to UVA. So Joey played in Chelan, Washington. He was the best player by far on his team. Dad was his coach. He got to do whatever he wanted to do. He shot whatever shot he wanted to shoot. He played point guard. He played every position on the floor. So, but he was, you know, again, Ron and Tony had the relationship, but I think he wanted to ultimately come and play for Tony.
It's not, so what you're saying, it's not all bad to have your father coach you.
It's not bad at all, especially when you're good. If you're good, it's the best thing ever. if you're not one of the top five, then you do not want to play for your dad.
Yeah, well, I guess it depends on how crazy your father is, too, as a coach.
Yeah, most coaches are crazy.
Joe, welcome. Thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, appreciate you guys, man. It's an honor to be on. So I was telling Jay Willie yesterday. Happy to join you guys.
Joey, I'm this look, man. What is this look you got going on?
I actually kind of forgot about this. It's kind of, you know, started to grow on me a little bit.
Had the mustache for a couple of days now. Beard and like shaving? Did you stop?
It was post bubble. I took it down. And just left the mustache, and then now I'm just kind of sitting here rocking it for the last week or so.
Where are you now, Joe?
I'm back in New York right now.
Because I was going to say, that is such a Brooklyn look.
It is. Nobody looks at me twice. I kind of blend in with everybody here.
I got a look that I can tell you what kind of look it is, but this is a
PG-13
program. I don't want to tell you what kind of look he's got.
Yeah, no, let's keep it PG-13.
Yes, exactly right.
So, Joe, I got to tell a quick story. When Richie McKay and Tony Bennett were recruiting Ty, we walked into on a Ty's unofficial visit, and we're hanging out with Richie and driving around and showing us the grounds, and then we go into the office, and Richie turns to me and says, "I'm going to tell you like I told Joe Harris's father. I told him Joe was going to be a pro. And he said, I'm telling you now, Ty's going to be a pro." And I was like, what are you talking about? Anyway, do you remember him saying that to you or your dad?
I do remember him saying that to my dad. I think my dad definitely didn't say anything about that after I was on my visit. But he mentioned something to me about it later on. I think after my first year at school. But I don't know if Richie was saying that when I first got there. Jay Willie could probably back me up on that.
He said it to me that when you got there, when you first got there, that he told your dad right before you got
there. Hey, Mark, after the first 2 weeks of doing closeouts, there was no way we thought Joe was going to be a pro. He couldn't chop his feet and throw his hands up.
I couldn't. I wasn't coordinated enough to chop my feet, put my hands up. Mustafa was cooking
me. It was hilarious.
Well, wait a minute. You say you weren't coordinated. I'm watching your games now, and congratulations on an incredible season.
Thank you.
And I'm watching your games, and I'm going, I don't remember Kyle Smith, who we know, his wife Katie, right, from Washington, who's now back at Washington State, who I know from Columbia, University of New York. When he first told me about you, I'm going, I don't ever remember Kyle telling me that you were this athletic, because I'm watching your games, and I'm watching how high you're getting your jump shot, how you're attacking the basket. And I'm going, this guy is athletic. Talking about not being coordinated on closeout drills.
Hey, Joe, I think I was athletic to some degree, but I wasn't coordinated enough to do the closeouts.
Joe, tell him about your closeouts that we practice after practice.
After practice, Coach Curtis would take me aside, and he would literally have me close out like, I've been talking like 20 minutes after practice, going around in a circle, closing out to him. They even tested it out, me just doing one hand. Instead of two, it was like this whole thing I'd practice every day.
Hey, but hey, you're in the league now. You guys don't close out anyway. You just run by.
Everybody's running people off the line.
Yeah. Hey, Mark, it was so funny. It was so funny. Hey, but quite honestly, Joe, I think people, those teams we had back then never truly understood the size and athleticism we had with those guys.
Man. Like
Joe, Justin,
Malcolm, that was our backcourt.
Malcolm, Akil Mitchell. We had good Darion, Anthony Gill. We had really good athletes with size and strength. And I think we surprised a lot of people. you know, we got the misconception of how we play, but we were an athletic group with that bunch.
Definitely.
And physical.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
What do you attribute? You had like your second year in Cleveland wasn't going great, right? What were you thinking during that year?
Yeah, so my second year in Cleveland, I had it's kind of some weird like foot problems to start the year, and I ended up having surgery on my foot at the end of December, and I got cut. Yeah, or actually, you see the back. I got traded the same day I had surgery and cut. So I had surgery in the morning. I got traded when I basically got out of like my operation, and then I got cut in the evening. So it was like all in the span of one day in my second year. And it was a quick realization, you know, of the nature and the business of the NBA.
How did you keep it together? And what did you do at that night or when you woke up the next morning? Were you completely dejected and demoralized?
I actually weirdly was feeling pretty good. I was like feeling pretty optimistic. And I thought that I was in, you know, somewhat of a good spot for whatever reason. I don't know exactly why. My mom actually was with me at the time. And my mom, I remember my mom being a lot more frustrated and upset than I was. I was like, Mom, it's all going to work out. You know, even if I had, you know, I was like, my whole thing is, you know, I get to play basketball professionally. If that means it's in the NBA or somewhere else, I was cool with it no matter where it worked out. But for whatever reason, you know, I was optimistic that I would have another opportunity to try and prove myself in the NBA. And thankfully enough, I did with the Nets, and then I was able to make it stick.
What was your conversation like with Mark Bartlestein, your agent? Or does Mark represent you directly or Kieran?
Yeah, so I remember calling Mark right after David Griffin and a couple of people from the Cavs had called me and letting him know.
I'm sorry to interrupt. I hope it wasn't Kobe Altman.
Kobe. So I did talk to Kobe after the fact. So I initially heard the news from David Griffin, but I had built up a good relationship with Kobe, who you obviously know really well, Ty knows really well. And then I talked to Trent Redden and Mike Gansey, the other guys that were working in the front office, and they all kind of called me initially after it happened. But David Griffin was the one that kind of gave me the news, and then the other guys just kind of called me to follow suit and, you know, sort of wish me luck and just talk about how much they enjoyed having me around, that sort of a thing. But, yeah, initially right when it happened, I called Mark, and Mark was then sort of scrambling, because that's the thing that a lot of people don't really understand is, like, this sort of stuff, you know, that situation in particular, it happened. My agent had no idea, you know, and then he's trying to scramble to make sure that Orlando can try and keep me on so I can at least, you know, qualify for the 41 games or whatever it is. But nature of the business, you know, my season was basically all but done at that point. And, you know, Orlando just ended up cutting me and I never even set foot there.
Hey, so Joey, don't worry about that. You're in a contract year. This is a big year for you. it's all worked out. Just
I want it all worked out. Everybody's got different
loan, Joe.
What's that?
I need a loan though. At some point when you sign, you know, Austin and Cam, they said, Daddy, we need a bigger house with a pool.
Oh, easy.
You want a loan or a grant?
I need a house. I know you're living good.
Yep, playing golf almost every day. He's living real good.
No, you deserve it, Joe. You worked your butt off. You know, we were fortunate. The staff was able to go up when you were going through the Brooklyn deal.
Yeah, the free agents the first time around with Brooklyn. You guys came up there. Yep. That's cool. Everybody's got different path of figuring it out. Some people, it takes a little longer. Some guys are able to, you know, have the right opportunity early on, but you know, my first 2 years in Cleveland, whatever, you could write them off or look back on them poorly. But for me, to be honest, those were like really valuable experiences, even though I didn't play a ton and it didn't really necessarily set me up in a trajectory that I wanted for my NBA career. But like, I learned so much just being around so many good veteran guys. You know, I look back on that team, you know, Mike Miller is coaching in Memphis. James Jones is the GM in Phoenix. You know, Brendan Haywood, Sean Marion, Richard Jefferson, obviously LeBron, K-Love, Kyrie, like the amount of guys that are on that team that I just sort of was able to kind of just from afar and just watch. I learned so much just doing that.
What are you looking at and how do you see next year shaping out for you?
Sorry, say that again, Mark.
How do you see next year shaping up for you with the Nets or with another team?
You know, I don't know 100%. This is kind of a weird off season right now, even just in terms of the free agency dates and all that. You know, they right now are set for October 18th, but I think they're going to get pushed back a couple of weeks. So it's just sort of a long time period between now and free agency. My ideal scenario, though, is to come back to Brooklyn. You know, this is, again, where I was afforded the opportunity. You know, I've spent the last 4 years here. I love living here. I love being here. I love what the Nets are about. You know, the organization as a whole is second to none across the league, you know, in terms of our reputation, how they treat their players. It's a first-class operation. And then at the end of the day, too, you look at the roster. We have a unique situation where we really can look at the roster and say we have an opportunity to play for a championship. And you can't say that about a lot of teams. So you combine all that. The ideal scenario is for me to stay in Brooklyn.
That team is set next year.
No doubt.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, you look – even – I mean, KD and Kyrie didn't play, and you guys had a great bubble season. And Caris LeVert.
Yeah.
Dinwiddie. I mean, I don't know how I look at it. And I don't follow the NBA intensely, but I'm trying to figure out how they keep everybody. But I know – that if you're on that team and this is not lip service, that team has everything, right? With you being there.
Yeah.
Somebody that can consistently hit shots from the outside and attack the basket.
Yeah.
Kyrie and KD, that is a really good lineup.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, like you said, you never know how things shake out, how, you know, the nature of the NBA is sometimes a tough one in terms of keeping everybody around. But if the roster were to stay as it is right now, there's a lot of talent and a lot of depth.
Have you had any communication with your new coach?
Yes, I have, actually. I met with him the other day, grabbed a coffee with him and Sean. It's the first time I'd ever met Steve. And, you know, his reputation, obviously across the league, is incredible. Every guy that's ever played with him, anybody that's ever been around him, nothing but good things. And that's exactly how he was in person, too. So, you know, I think, again, yeah, you add that into the mix, though, too. You have a coach like Steve Nash, and I'm excited to see the staff that he assembles. But factor that in with what Brooklyn's already got going on, and it obviously makes it a very appealing place.
Hey, Buckets, no pressure, but I got y'all in the Eastern Conference Finals next year. just a heads up.
All right. I like that.
All right.
I've only heard the best things about Steve Nash, and it turns out he actually interned for a really good friend of mine. He just, after playing basketball, he just wanted to learn about the production business. And my friend owned a editing company. And really? So he had no idea who he was. And she was like, oh, can you go get me coffee?
No way. He probably did it too. He's like one of the most humble guys. It's incredible.
Yeah, he's incredibly grateful and humble. So he absolutely did. And she
the way that he carries himself, it's very sort of genuine, authentic, in the sense like Coach Bennett, you know, where a lot of success, obviously done extremely well, but he is just who he is, you know, just a good person, good guy, very humble.
Did he give you any indication of what your role would be next year?
No, he didn't really talk too much about it. I think, obviously, if I do stay in Brooklyn, that's something that will certainly be discussed, and even probably in the lead up, you know, but in that short meeting, it was more just sort of getting familiar with one another. He obviously knows that I'm a free agent. I'm one of the few guys on the team that's in this situation right now where I am a free agent. And he just talked about, you know, how he, you know, felt about me as a player and wanted me to come back and be in Brooklyn.
That's great.
Hey, Joe, tell us who of the former players you keep in touch with. You keep in touch with a lot of the guys?
Oh, yeah, like the guys we played with?
Yeah, former NBA guys.
Yeah, all those guys. So – like you mentioned beforehand, you know, the lineup that we had, I guess pretty much everybody in there, like over the span of this last, whatever, 6 years, I've kept into, you know, somewhat regular touch with. Obviously, Justin and Malcolm and Mike Scott, those guys a little bit easier to see in person because we play against each other and a lot of times we're in each other's cities, we're about to eat, hang out, even just now in the bubble. You know, Malcolm, Justin, and I, we were going out to eat quite a bit. Obviously, we didn't play with Ty, but he's still part of the family, the NBA family. We run into him. I was going out to Phoenix last year. I was meeting up with
AD. I remember London too. Every time I go to LA, during the off season.
Joe, I think we lost your audio a little bit. Can you hear me?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Okay, that's much better. Okay, great. Thanks. Okay, fantastic. How much do you follow UVA now?
Every chance, if I don't have a game or anything going on, I'm gonna watch him play. I watch all of Virginia's games.
Yeah.
All right. Hey, once a Wahoo, always a Wahoo, Mark. You know that.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, I follow UVA everything. Football, wow. Basketball. I mean, whenever I can watch it, I'm watching it.
Yeah. Why would you not?
Yeah.
And so what kind of coach was Jason Williford?
Hey. Jay Willie, I'll say this.
Don't hold back.
With the rest of the staff that we had, I guess Coach Sanchez had a little bit of that edge to him too. I won't even take it away from Coach Bennett and Coach McKay, but Jay Willie and Coach Sanchez were definitely the guys that if you were teetering on that line, they were the ones to bring you back. They were like the real ones on the staff. You know, they're not going to sugarcoat things to you. They're going to keep it 100% honest with you and let you know when you need to get your shit together.
Hey, that was – he said it best, Mark. No sugarcoating there.
Yeah.
Hey, but when –
you guys played, though, too. Like, obviously everybody played, but, like, you played at Virginia, and I think your relatability factor with the guys was just better than probably everybody else on the staff. I mean, maybe it's different, a little different now, but, like, especially then when we were playing for you, like, you were, like, the guy that everybody went to, I felt like.
And Mark – I was able to jump in a few drills back then. I can't do that anymore.
He was in a lot of drills back then.
Yeah.
Was he a bruiser?
Oh yeah, he actually used to kick some guys' ass too. I mean, there's some guys that are a little bit, might have some an off day here or there, and Jay Willie would be taking advantage of them.
All right,
I had to let him know, Mark.
I hear you. I represent the old cats. Four quick questions for you, and then we're gonna let you go. KD, LeBron.
Oh, man. I mean, KD's my teammate, so I got to go with KD.
If you didn't, you wouldn't be able to go back to the practice
gym. I wouldn't. I know where my bread's buttered.
Your 2014 team versus Jay Willie's, what was that, 92, 93 team, Jay Willie?
95 team.
94,
95.
95, 94, 95. The team that you guys had? Yeah. I mean, to be honest, I didn't watch a lot of Jay Willie's highlights from back then, but I'm going to ride with my squad. We had a pretty damn good team.
But I'm sure he mentioned to it a few times.
Oh, yeah, he probably did, for sure.
Yeah. All right, your 2014 team versus the championship 2018-2019 team.
Yeah, everybody likes to bring this up. I mean, they won a national title, so that's basically all you have to hear for that. I do obviously think very highly of the team that I was on. And I think, Jay Willie, you can correct me, if we would have gotten past Michigan State, I'm 100% convinced that we would have played in the Final Four.
If Anthony doesn't sprain his ankle in that game, you're talking about the Madison Square Garden game?
Yes. Yeah.
I always tell everybody that I was at that game, and I have to admit that I had Michigan State that year in my pool. So,
hey, Michigan State was tough, though. They had such a good team. I even look back on it now, like, Denzel Valentine, Gary Harris, Adrian Payne, Brandon Dawson. They had some really good players.
Yeah, incredible game. And there was
Wouldn't there be a Trice on that team?
Yeah, Trice was on that team too. Keith Applin was Meyer. They had a really good team.
That's three good pros you're talking about.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yep.
All right, last one for you. Does Tony Bennett ever coach in the NBA?
I mean, Jay Willie would know this better than anybody probably. I think he's got the right demeanor for it, for sure. I think, and then obviously the basketball stuff, that's a no-brainer. He would be able to adapt really easily. I think it's just a matter if he would want to, you know, if he feels the need to take on that challenge, whatever it might be, whatever his motivation would be. But Jay Willie would definitely know better than me on that.
I say Tone's going to go and win, try to get another NCAA title.
I see that. I hope he stays at Virginia forever. But
no doubt. I don't see him doing that in no time soon. I mean, I think if he makes a move from here, potentially it's the NBA. But I I know that he and Laurel love it here, and I know how hungry he is to try to make this as consistent a national contender year in and year out, and that's his focus.
I love that. I mean, that's what I would think for sure too, but I guess you never know.
Yeah, Joe, thanks so much for joining us. Really appreciate it.
Before you go, who's winning the title this year in the NBA?
Oof. I mean,
I'll tell you who I got in the championship. I got Celtics and Lakers.
I can see that. I might say the Clippers. I'd say Celtics Clippers.
And who you like? And if it's Celtics Clippers, who you like?
Man, I might go with the Celtics.
They're playing good ball, aren't they?
They are, man.
Yeah. All right. I just wanted to get – look, you see that all the time. You see it night in and night out. I just wanted your opinion.
But yeah.
Hey, the bubble's been great, man.
Basketball is so good. Yeah. Basketball is so good. Guys are competing. They play. I mean, I think it's just like as a basketball purist and just as a fan, I mean, I love watching it at every level, high school, college, international, NBA, whatever. I just like watching hoops, WNBA. This has been such good basketball to watch.
No doubt. Hey, listen, I appreciate you jumping on. Tell the fam hello.
Yep.
Stay safe. And listen, best of luck throughout free agency. This is fun. You've earned this.
Appreciate you guys, man. Thanks for having me on.
Yep. Thanks so much, Joe. Right, hope to see you at one time soon.
All right. See you guys.
Take care. Classy, classy dude.
He one of the best. Hey, listen, one thing I'll say about Tone and the guys, like Jeff White just done a piece on Jerome ANC. Like the guys are high character kids, man, you know the program better than anybody, but high character and we got another high character guy joining us tonight.
Justin, what's going on? Justin, we can't hear you. Can you adjust your volume?
What's up? How you doing?
Awesome. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, no problem.
You know, we were just talking about high character guys. I don't think we've had a current guy on in the last couple of weeks that has not been an honor roll student.
That's how we do it.
And Justin's another one. Yes, so sir. Congratulations on that. That's so impressive that you can play at such a high level and still maintain such a high GPA. Figuring out, especially your first year, mm-hmm. figuring out your schedule with a demanding – people. I don't know if people know how demanding your basketball schedule is.
It can be tough at times.
It can be tough. Humility, I love it. Tell me what your schedule is, Justin, like last year during a typical week, during the season.
During the season, I believe I had a –
let's say you had two games a week.
Mm-hmm.
And one was away and one was home.
So, like, my class schedule or basketball schedule?
Your whole schedule.
Give us that rundown. If we played on a Tuesday, say we played Tuesday, Saturday, how would that week look for you?
And let's say you played away on a Tuesday and home on a Saturday. Starting with Monday.
Played away on a Tuesday, meaning that – so we're going to wake up and lift on Monday.
Wake up at what time?
My lift was at 7 a.m. because I had a 9 a.m. class. So I lift at 7 a.m. We go and shoot for 20, 25 minutes after lift. And then I got a shower and head out for class. I have class at 9. And then I had another class at, I believe, 11. And then I would go get lunch. I'd go for like 30 minutes, go get lunch, and then I would go to the gym around, that would be around like 1:30, and I would kind of just chill in the locker room at 2 before we had practice at 3, and I would be out there by like 2 o'clock and just kind of work out and work on my game a little bit before practice.
And then how much homework would you have at night?
So depending on what we're doing in class, I mean, I could have homework for 2-3 classes, and it's like one class was heavy on writing, so we had like a writing assignment every week, and then there was another class where it was just kind of like there wasn't any homework, there was just labs, but like you had to keep on track with those labs and like all those worksheets that you had to do with that. And then another class was just history, which was a lot of reading. So I mean, it can pile up on you, especially if you slack off. So it can be tough.
Yeah. And then sometimes if you had a game on a Tuesday night, and let's say you were playing at North Carolina, mm-hmm. or at NC State, you were taking the bus back, right? Because you guys couldn't fly to those games.
Yeah.
So you weren't getting back to your dorm room until what, 2-3 o'clock in the morning, 4 o'clock in the morning?
Yeah, there was one game in particular, and it was Miami, but we played them on a Wednesday night at 9 p.m. And I don't think we got back to JPJ until about 3:30 or 4. And I swear it's because we're at UVA. They made sure we were at class the next morning.
We did a class check.
Wait a minute. Justin, are you suggesting that if you were at another school, you may not –
I'm not saying anything, but I mean, I don't know. I mean, I know some people praise Luke May for showing up to class after hitting the shot, so I don't know what you got going on, but we had class checks. That's all I know.
That's right.
Yeah, I did hear that. And you have TJ, who was, I'm sure, very insistent and followed you guys closely, making sure you guys were at class and doing work on the road.
Yeah.
And having study hall, when I understand.
Yeah, road game study halls, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, no, people don't understand, like, when I tell people, no, at UVA, you really had to go to class. Mm-hmm. It's not like some of these other schools where they're looking around and not really looking over their shoulder or making sure that you guys are really doing what you're supposed to do in the classroom. So that's always impressive, yeah. You've had a stellar high school career. Very impressive. And you were recruited by North Carolina, UVA, and some other top schools. What was it that separated UVA from some of the other schools? And how did your mom and did anyone else weigh in on the decision?
I talk to my family a lot. I mean, I'm really close with my family. We've been through so much together. So we kind of just lean on each other for everything. And I would say one of the biggest things that made UVA a favorite was just not a lot of people know, but like my junior year, they actually were talking to me a lot. And I think the first coach I saw was Jay Willie. I know I was playing with Team Loaded. I forgot where we were, but I know he saw me.
You were in Orlando, if I'm not mistaken.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and were you at Richmond too after that?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, I remember that. Yep. But Jay Willie. I just remember him seeing him, and you know, I was like, oh, that's Coach for Virginia. And then, you know, later on, I ended up getting calls from I think I got a call from you, and then I ended up getting a call from Coach Bennett, and just talking to those guys. I mean, I felt like a connection with Jay Willie. I feel like we're very loud personality kind of people. And so I feel like we kind of connected on that sense. And then just Coach Bennett, just the guy he is. I mean, I think I was in Vegas visiting my family when he called. And I think we're on the phone for an hour. And I mean, I didn't even notice. Like, it was just so fluent. You know, a lot of times when you get recruited by coaches, you're kind of like, oh, what do I got to say? Like, you're trying to think about it. But, like, with these guys, it was just so fluent. Like, I could just say what was on my mind. And I was so similar to how – my beliefs were similar to theirs, to where it just kind of just flowed. And I really liked that feeling.
Right. So who were the choices? Who did it come down to? UVA, was UNC in the final three?
Yeah, it was between State, UVA, and UNC. I wanted to stay close to home, but I wasn't set on staying 10 minutes away. Cause I know part of the college experience and part of, you know, just growing up, you kind of have to get out of that comfortable stage of being home. So I didn't necessarily like have my mindset on being that close to home, because I'm 20 minutes away from State, UNC, and Duke. I live like right in the middle. Right. So UVA not only was a good choice for basketball, but it was kind of like a good choice just for growing up. You know, I'm not far from home, but I'm still a good distance from home, and, you know, I can be independent.
What coach from UNC recruited you?
It was mainly Roy, and I know my first call came from Robinson. And then I know Hubert Davis. Actually, I played against his son in high school. They were in our conference, so we played against him twice. And I think I remember he was at a game, but I was already committed to Penn State, but he was just watching his son. And I know I had a really good game. I think I was 6 for 7 from three in the first half and ended up having like 37 and didn't play the second half of the game much. So it was a good game, but I just remember thinking, I was like, dang, like, he was watching, blah, blah, blah. I don't know. Everyone always made a big deal. They're like, oh, you're going to get offered by UNC. And I was like, dude, I'm committed. So it was just a funny little story.
Yeah. What were your conversations with Roy Williams like, and how were they different than the ones with TB?
I don't know. That's tough. I don't think me and Roy Williams connected a lot.
He could have been connected on faith a lot, and that was like in the majority of our talks. Like, it worked out to where, like, you know, he had.
Hey, Justin, can you adjust your volume a little bit? I think it knocked out a little bit.
Can you hear me now?
Yep, that's great. Thanks.
Okay. I was saying me and Coach Bennett just kind of connected on a spiritual and like faith level. Mm-hmm. Because I think he asked me a question about my favorite verse, and I told him, and it was Philippians 4:1-3, and everyone uses it. It's a really common quote. It's, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. But the thing for me was, I don't use that as an empowerment of I can do the impossible. I use it in its actual biblical context, which is talking about being thankful and being grateful. So it talks about how I know what it's like to have plenty, and I know what it's like to go without, and I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. So it's actually talking about being humble, being thankful for what you have. So I like it because of that, because it shows a different kind of power. And I think if you didn't understand or study the Bible, you wouldn't understand where that quote is coming from. And I feel like that's a lot of times why I get slapped on, I can do the impossible. But what it really is talking about is, I can be thankful in any circumstance. And I really like that quote.
Mark, he was learned. He had already had the pillars down, and he didn't even know the program was founded on the pillars. So it was almost a match made in heaven, you know?
How did that being grateful and having that much humility, how did that help you last year? You came from being the man on your high school team, playing as much as you wanted, being, you know, second team all state or all honorable mention. And then you go into a team that had just won a national championship where you're going to be fighting for playing time. You had guys that had been playing in front of you that had been playing. Some had been playing, some had not been playing, right? You had Mamadi, you had Jay, you had Braxton, who had, you know, had their share of maybe playing the year before and maybe not been playing as much as they wanted to as well. But how did that philosophy and how did your character and being grateful and humility, how did that help you with last year?
Before he answers that, he really put my psychology degree to work, because Justin will probably say he bounced a lot of stuff off of me. The frustration mounted, and he put me to work. So I earned my keep last year with this dude. And there's another Justin that he reminded me a lot of, but I'll let him answer that question.
Well, what's the question again? How am I thankful in that situation?
How did your humility help you? Because you went from being a star player in high school, and then you go to your freshman, your first year at UVA, and you're not playing that much. Right. And everybody thinks that they're going to be playing on the next level. Right. And if you don't, then you probably don't belong in the ACC. Right. You've got to be so confident and so determined to play at that level.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely went in thinking that I was going to at least play, I wouldn't say too much more, but just a tiny bit more than I did last season. There were so many things that I didn't understand until I got seasoned within the the team, within the offense, within the defense that I'm seeing now while we're working out now, that it's just like, it's crazy because I'm watching our first years. They're going through the same thing I went through last year, and it's crazy to be on the other side of the game.
Jess, your video went, your audio went out again.
Hold on.
I think that might be better. There you go. You're good.
I'll put something. Maybe I'm just tripping. Okay. I was just saying that it's kind of humbling just seeing the first years go through things like that I struggled with last year as well. But just being on the other side of the glass gives you a new perspective. But in terms of last year, just I've always had this mindset. I totally forgot where I got it from, but it was work like – I think it was Kobe. Be the overachieving – I forgot the word he used, but basically just work like you're the last player on the roster, but like play and have a mentality like you're the best player in the world. Right. And so I tried to translate that. So, you know, I wanted to have the confidence that I could play with the best of them, but I also wanted to have that mentality like I need to work because I need to get better. And so I just kept that with me throughout the whole season. And I'm not afraid to work hard. I feel like a lot of things that I got in high school and where I am today is just because I did work hard. And so it kind of just like, I mean, just humility helps me a lot because I just know that, like, you know, I got to work, you know, not everything's going to be handed to me. It's not going to be a smooth sail. So, I mean, there's an adjustment period and just attack it and work.
Yeah. I truly think that those are three of the best characters, qualities you can have of being grateful, being humble, right? And having respect. Mm-hmm. And you have all those clearly. What did you do to work on your game this summer to improve yourself?
So coming into last season, my shot got altered a good amount, more than I was definitely comfortable with, but I saw it as a challenge. And when I see a challenge, I take it head on and I don't stop until I complete it or do the best I can with it. So we changed my shot. I struggled with that a lot during the season. I passed up a lot of shots. I know people talked about how I passed up shots. I wasn't really shooting at the right opportunities. Thing was, I just wasn't comfortable with shooting. So the whole summer, I put up over 500 shots a day, definitely over 350 makes a day easily. I put up shot after shot, whether I was pick and popping, I was shooting up, drifting down, catch and shoot. I did every kind of shot I could. I did shots where I didn't dip the ball at all and I kind of went straight into it. I just worked my shot nonstop. I played a lot of defense. There was COVID, so it was a little harder, but I got two guys that I knew weren't going to be going around with a bunch of people, and we all social distanced and kept to ourselves, and we ended up just playing basketball. And there's a lot of times where I worked my closeouts. I did every drill that we did and during the season at UVA, I did it at the gym at home. I worked every single thing. There was a time where I was working out with two guys and I went automatic defense the whole entire hour of the workout. I just worked my slides as much as I could. I wanted to come prepared because I knew part of my problem was sliding on defense. And then I knew the other part was shooting the ball. And then the last part I would say was handling and playmaking decisions. So I focused on that part when we were scrimmaging or playing like 1-on-1, 2-on-2, et cetera. So I just worked on everything I possibly could. And I worked at it probably every day, a couple times a day.
Who suggested you change your shot? And was that the same person that worked on it with you?
We had Kirk Penny. We had Coach Willie, Coach Bennett, Coach Soderberg.
You worked with everybody.
Yeah, I just about worked with everybody. And that's the great thing about this coaching staff. Like they preach the pillars to us, but they practice the pillars themselves. Like we have Coach Williford and Coach Bennett, who are not like, you know, assistant coaches. They technically just kind of have to run practice. They don't really have to get too involved. Like these guys were on the court with me 30 minutes before practice, 45 minutes before practice, and they're working on my shot with me in detail. Like, they're helping me out. You know, these guys, that's not in their job. They don't have to come out there 45 minutes early and help a freshman work at his shot, you know. But they did that. And I think that's something special too. And you can see that when you're talking about getting recruited by UVA, like, that's something you see as a recruit. You can see the authenticity in there, and, like, you know, what they preach and how they act.
Right. What do you think of Coach Williford now as a coach? And are you aware of him as a player?
I watched one game. It was like a throwback game that I ended up seeing. I think they played UNC. I got to see Coach Willie play a little bit. So I'm not too aware of him as a player. Had to be pretty good. But, you know, I could definitely have taken him at any given point. But we're not going to talk about that right now.
But would you believe that Coach Williford was a trash talker who used to get kicked out of practice when he was the second year and third year at UVA?
Oh, yeah. He still has it today. You can hear it, except for he's in the position of authority now, so it's a little different.
I talk to them dudes every day, Mark. I pour gasoline on every competition we got going in practice.
He was my coach today in practice. I got scored on one time, and he starts talking junk to me. And he's my coach for this practice. It don't matter. He's just Coach Willie challenges you, and if you're not a I don't want to insult, but, like, if you're not like a strong, a mentally tough person,
yeah,
he'll get under your skin and he'll bother you. Even if you are mentally tough, like, he'll get under your skin sometimes. But you got to see it as a challenge and out of love. Like, he recruited me. He wants to make me the best player I can be. So when he yells at me, when he's yelling across the gym and you hear it echo for 5 minutes in the whole arena, like, you know it's out of love. He's not just trying to pick on you, not just trying to make you look bad. Like, he really is challenging you. And when you see it as a challenge, you see a whole new different aspect of the game.
All right, I got one last question for you. Who are the biggest talkers and guys who are very emphatic on the court during practice?
You're talking to the biggest trash talker. Go ahead.
I would say I talk a lot. Jaden Nixon actually talks a good amount too. He's a fun guy to be around. He challenges you as well. Just defensively, like, he's very solid on defense, and he can challenge, and he talks junk too, and it gets competitive, and I really like that part. I would say between me and Jaden Nixon, another one I would say is Jay Huff is very emotional on the court. Like, you can see him yell a lot and all that stuff. But as far as trash talk, I think it's me, Jaden Nixon, sometimes Kie. Kie will go by somebody real fast and leave a little remark. So it's kind of – I like it, though. I mean, I love the trash talk. It just definitely makes everything competitive, and I really like that.
All right, I said the last question, but I actually have one more. Out of the new guys, you see everybody coming together and everybody getting acclimated okay?
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir. We're all getting along really well. I mean, the guys we recruit, I mean, we all get along really well. They're making big strides throughout the summer to now. They've made big strides as first years. And I think we have a really good and really in-depth team.
Yeah.
I think it's going to look really good this year.
Yeah. Looks great from what I'm hearing. Everybody's playing well.
Yes, sir.
So excited to see the season. Looking forward to it, and looking forward to watching you play. Enjoy your second year. Keep up the great studies and the basketball, and we will talk to you soon. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks for jumping on. I appreciate you. Hey, Mark, I'll end it with this. Justin really committed himself to his conditioning and his workout, and his body is changed a lot. What are you now, about 218?
Nah, I was like 213 last time.
So he's probably gonna play about 218, 220, but he's really leaned out and gotten to where he's in really good shape. So we're expecting big things from the young man, and he is one of the hardest workers we got on the team. So just keep up the good work.
Sir.
All right. appreciate you jumping on, and I'll see you. I won't see you tomorrow. I'll see you Friday.
All right, sounds good, Coach.
All right. See you.
Take care, Justin.
All right, take care, sir.
From one former who you know, we talk about the pillars all the time, and the character of guys at UVA is so special.
It is. It's
great job with that.
No, Tony won't have. I mean, we're not gonna. You know that we're not gonna take a shortcut. Yeah. We're not gonna take a shortcut on character. And those kids, they buy in. They know what we're about. Both our philosophy, but the university's philosophy as well. You know, from an academic standpoint, you know, they're well-rounded kids.
Absolutely. I can't tell you how many compliments that I got about the team during the Final Four. It was crazy. It was, you know, that player holds the door open for us. That player says, thank you. People just, for whatever reason, assume because they're an athlete, they may not be that way. Or maybe they had a bad history or a bad experience with more experiences with other athletes. But the UVA crew just is a different special. It's a different special crew where you guys recruit. It really is. Kudos to you guys. All right, last, not least, let us talk about, in a desperate situation, how the season can be held together and continue in Jay Willie's bubble.
First of all, this is strictly my opinion, and I hope we can get through the season. You know, ultimately a lot rides on what football does and how football goes will sort of dictate how we go. And there are all kinds of scenarios out there. You know, I think we're planning on starting the season after Thanksgiving. And I've heard talk about it won't start until January. Who knows? I don't know. And at some point, lots of players from across the country will test positive. It'll happen. The more we test. So I think in order to for us to succeed, the NBA has shown the blueprint that there has to be some form of a bubble. And so I've said this earlier that, you know, if we can't get the non-conference games and, you know, it's too much to do that, then just take, and it's probably easier, and you know, I wouldn't be saying this if I was at American or AU just from a financial standpoint, because I don't know if we would be able to afford it, but here in the ACC, if you're Power Five, you could do a bubble. We could do an ACC bubble where we're either in Greensboro or we're in Raleigh, and it's just conference games, and you play however many conference games, you know, we can fit in during that time. Ideally, you'd like to play a true round robin where you play 28 and you play everybody twice. I think that'd be really cool. I think the fans would love to see that, because you don't get to do that anymore like when I was playing. You know, when I play, you play everybody twice. I think that'd be a true test of who's the best in the conference. And then from there, however the NCAA deems it, have regional bubbles where you play regional sites for tournament games. So that's what I came up in my head, Mark. I don't know if it'll ever fly, but again, I'm no expert, but somehow there has to be bubbles where we're isolated, because when it's just student body and everybody around,
would this be in your bubble?
Say again?
What time and frame would this be in your bubble?
I don't know how it works. I was working on the January time frame where you gave us, you know, time to hopefully there's a vaccine, there's some type of treatment. You're closer to that come January. But, you know, you could push the March Madness back. I mean, you could play through April and May, and you kind of play into the spring the same way baseball does with the College World Series, where those kids are, you know, we're out of school, but they're still playing through June. So, you know, if we had to go up until May, from January to May, and play a season in the tournament, I mean, it's not March Madness, but again, I don't know, and it's above my head a little bit, but I don't know how the TV stuff works with all of that. I would assume this is a different year, and we would figure it out.
And you have to factor in classes and where kids would go to, student athletes would take courses. And
So I ultimately, they'd be doing virtual. It'd be all online. It's what they did to end the season. It's what they've been doing all summer. We're back in person now. I don't even know if we're in person now. I think we're all still doing virtual. So to me, you can do virtual. And we could have that set up where they're doing it the same way we do it when we're on the road, when we travel and you got study hall, you know, you just, your day be chopped up where they're doing class and then you practice accordingly afterwards, wherever we were located. So I think it's doable, but the other issue is the economics behind it. How much are you testing? How expensive is it to house all of these teams in these hotels and feed them? And, you know, where's that cost? Are the schools dividing that? Is it the ACC? Is it the, you know, I don't know. I'd hate to be the decision maker on all of this.
I think it's a really good plan. So
it sounds good.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. Yeah.
There are a lot of logistics that would have to get worked out. And
sure. Absolutely.
And I feel bad for, you know, with the non-conference opponents that we've had locked in and you had guaranteed contracts. And, you know, when I was at American, we needed those guaranteed games. Those guaranteed games helped the athletic department. So, you know, if we're doing away with those, you know, there's a trickle down. It trickles down to everybody. So it's unfortunate, but it's where we are. I know one thing, we cannot afford not to play the NCAA tournament. There has to be some form of basketball.
Right. And which means there's probably going to be some form of sacrifice.
Right.
At this stage.
Right. So,
and of course, I'll say it, although it doesn't need to be said, that we all want the season to take off and start at its normal time, but that's just tricky right now.
Right. Right.
We're all going to make some allowances.
Well, football, let's one step at a time. Let's see how football gets through. I mean, we start up next week, I think.
I believe the 20th you guys are playing.
Who?
I believe the 20th.
I want to say the 16th or 19th or something like that. We got Virginia Tech. So
yes.
Let's see if we can beat the Hokies and then go from there.
All right. On that note, thanks everyone for joining us on another edition of the Jay Willie Show. We will be back on the 21st, hopefully talking about the victory over Virginia Tech on the football field.
No doubt. I can't wait.
Yep. How are your Steelers looking?
We're doing good. Yeah, man. I'm a little saddened because it's bittersweet. I love Ryan Shazier, the linebacker, and he had that horrible accident where he was recovering that spinal accident that he had. And he officially retired to, I want to say today or yesterday. So I know the Steelers organization was doing everything they can to get him back. And, you know, he was still under contract last year. And but he's retired and he's moving into his next phase. And it was a little bittersweet watching this thing on Twitter. I saw he tweeted something today, and he was a true Steeler. We're gonna miss that inside linebacker. He was good. I know it was only for a few years, but he's one of the best we've had. So we're gonna be all right. You hear me say we're gonna be all right. Those are my boys. We'll be fine.
Love those Steelers.
Yeah.
So we want to thank Joe Harris and Justin McCoy for coming on tonight. So great to talk to them. Jay Willie, I will talk to you and see you on the 21st.
All right, Mark. Thanks, man. Stay safe and tell the boys hello from me.
And do the same, please.
We'll do.
Take care.